I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Rant Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, Chris?
2019.
Oh, that's what we're doing. Okay, fine. It's not that hard. Y'all could have told me that ahead of time. My God, like keeping secrets. 2019. You know. All right,
I forgot.
I didn't know if we were doing Black Panther's Quest. No. I didn't know what we were doing.
We're just going to do it like that until we figure out what we're going to say for the next rest of the year.
Cool.
So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture. But our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. Of course, Lisa Bolakaja is out doing her thizzle somewhere.
I don't even know where she is.
Well, I'm sure she's teaching. They probably all back to
school. Oh, if she survived the mudslide on that mountain because, I mean, the rain came, what, in December? And she was like, yeah, I got to take care of the kids. I was like, lead them kids. Let them fend for themselves. That's yourself, a life lesson. They learn the hard way.
They need to.
Drive your ass down.
Exactly. So shout out to Lisa. She'll be back soon.
We love you, Lisa.
And we're also taping on a weekday, so, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, that's probably why she can't, All right.
Exactly. So, we got my man in the house, Chris Derrick, writer-director himself. What's going on, Chris? Some good shit? You getting ready to go out of town?
Yes, I am.
Good.
Where are you going?
Have the discussion later.
Okay, fair enough.
We can't talk about it all.
Okay, no problem.
But it's a good thing.
It's a very good thing.
Yeah. It's business.
Out of town for good?
No.
Oh.
No.
Darn.
He leaving on that midnight train to Georgia or something? What is it?
Man.
Yes. Yes.
And then we got our girl Lanelle White.
Georgia. Yes.
Lanelle White, writer, director, producer herself. What's going on, Lanelle?
Hey, happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you. How was your holiday?
It was good. I mean, I had, you know, you guys know I split my time between here and St. Louis. So I had a week of like reserve duty in St. Louis, and then I did 2 weeks in New York with the parents because I don't see them that often, and it's good.
When you do the reserve, can I ask you like what's your week look like when you're doing that?
I mean, it's I am fortunate. I mean, I'm attached to an active duty unit, and so it's like I show up at 7:30, I leave at 4:30.
Oh, okay.
You know, I do planning now. I don't fly an airplane anymore. I can just sit at a desk. I can.
Did you fly a plane before?
Oh God, yeah, that was what you did.
I didn't know that you flew like.
We've talked about this like so much. We've talked about this like ad nauseum, much.
Wait a minute. Combat missions? Did you actually like?
Yeah.
Like drop. Oh, you're a killer?
No.
They're not real
cargo.
Combat
is
missions.
It cargo? What
not
is it?
Real
No.
You didn't kill nobody.
I did fly combat missions. The definition of combat mission is not whether you killed someone.
I'm wanting to, you know, for me, you had to be killing people.
If you fly in a combat zone, these are combat missions. So I have several of those on my resume.
I need some dead people on your resume.
I don't.
I need some dead Iraqis or some dead Afghanis.
I potentially have
some ISIS
indirectly
people.
Supported missions that drop bombs on people because I was an air fueler. So, of course, if I'm giving the fighters gas, they're going and dropping the bombs. And
so you in the air, you load up.
Oh, that's the dope thing.
How am I explaining this to you guys now? Like, how
no, I know. I'm just
Chris
talking
is
out
like,
loud for
Chris is like, what is going on with you?
I know you were in the Air Force. I just didn't know that you were flying combat missions.
Okay.
Why would I not be doing that? I don't know.
Y'all ain't gonna worry me.
Certain people get, you know, those cushy assignments. they get basins.
I'm gonna send you my bio and you can just read that and you can catch up on what I've done in my life, okay? Just read the bio. It's real succinct.
I don't know how to read anymore.
Oh, that's gonna challenge you as a screenwriter then. That's gonna be hard to be a screenwriter then if you can't read.
Anyway,
so you had a question about my reserve duty. So instead of flying the missions anymore, I kind of tell people where to go.
Okay,
here you're gonna go. You're gonna pick this up in freaking Charleston, and you're gonna take it to Bagram. You're gonna take it to Kandahar, and you know that's it.
Do you ever get concerned that you're going to lose, you know, that muscle to fly?
No, that it's like riding a bike. If I want to go out and get it back, I'm not concerned about it.
Do you have to like train to get it back again, or do you think you could just jump on a plane and?
It would take me a little bit to get it back, okay. Especially if I go the private route, which is I'm not gonna fly military ever again.
Right.
It's just my own personal choice. Sure. I'm happy because it becomes too difficult trying to have a career in Hollywood and say, oh well, I'm actually stuck in Bagram or what's Baghdad with a broke jet, and I can't get back. So exactly. Can we move the meeting until I can't. We're not gonna do all that. So that's why the flying stuff is like, okay, I moved
that.
On.
Yeah, push that to the curb.
Yeah, but like civilian wise, if I want to go out and get a little Cessna and all of us fly up to Santa Barbara, whatever, I just need to like, I have all the type ratings already, and I have a license. I just don't have like. You just sure a fresher is all I would need and take a test. And they say, oh, okay, you can rent
and
this airplane.
They are different planes, though, because they're smaller.
Yeah, they are. Right? You can kill yourself. Like me, I flew a Boeing 707, right? So that's a different look when you're coming in for landing than if I'm in a little Cessna 172. Right. I mean, you're going to get so close to the ground to the point where I'm going to feel uncomfortable. Like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God.
Yeah,
whereas I'm used to like 50 feet, pull the engines back, get into the flare with a larger airplane, you know? Okay. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
See? Look at Chris all impressed. He's like, ain't that a bitch?
I don't know. We've talked about this so many times before.
But I didn't know about combat missions. I knew
what difference does that make? The, like, that, what
who
difference
gets
does that
shot
make?
At? There's flat cannon. I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
I don't. So if I hadn't flown combat missions, but was still a pilot in the Air Force, you would be less impressed.
No, I just was curious to know if you had flown combat missions and actually killed people. That's what I wanted to know.
I don't have.
If you haven't killed anybody, that's okay. It's okay.
I don't even think about it. I don't even think about it.
Right.
That's not my job. My job was to be there, offload the gas, you know, go home, do it again the next day, repeat. I don't, you know. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So with that, if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get to the show.
Yes.
So today, a couple things. We're going to talk about a couple different things today. One of them was, what was it, during Christmas we sent out that email to each other?
Yeah.
All of us?
Yeah.
Somewhere around then.
Either just after.
There was this cool little TED Talks that I believe you watched or one of you guys watched and you sent it to us.
Oh, I sent it. Yeah.
Let's set it up.
So there was a TED Talk by, I don't remember the woman's name, but the information will be in the show notes. This black woman, she had worked in Wall Street for a long time. And she was saying, and she was like, this is what you need to know to get ahead in your business, which is, how do you get a mentor?
Right.
You know, like, how do you, and so on top of that.
Or was it a sponsor?
She was saying, what do you need
to
do?
I think her word was a sponsor.
Because she was saying it's different than a mentor. She was saying that, you know, if you want to get ahead, like, in your business, it's not necessarily about how hard you work. It's you got to work hard and then find the sponsor who is going to push you forward.
Okay.
She was relating some story about how when she was working at some Wall Street bank, and she was invited into one of those peer review things, and she saw
the circle at the table,
the people are like, oh, you know, like so and so is a good worker and does this, and I love his work, and blah blah blah, and he's getting bounced upstairs. Perhaps even if he's got some other marks about him that might be not sweet, but they can vouch for his work in a way that they feel like I'm comfortable. It's just a vouching for him.
Right.
And I sent it to you guys because I was like, that's the one thing that I was talking to my friend Pavel a couple of months ago, and I was just complaining about some shit, and he was like,
you complaining now?
And he was saying to me, well, it's maybe because people don't trust you. And I was like, oh, that's a really good point.
I certainly don't trust you now after you like sitting there like didn't know I was a pilot in the Air Force after how many years have we been buddies?
I knew you were a pilot and I knew you were in the Air Force. I just was curious to know if you killed anyone or not.
Let me educate you on something with veterans. Like, do not, I beg all of you, any veteran you approach, do not come up to them with questions of if they're Army, whatever, Coast Guard, whatever, I don't care. Don't come up to them and say, have you killed anybody? That's the last question we ever want from anybody.
Because
you don't know what people are dealing with.
But that's why I said, would she even say?
I don't think I would. I'm just joking with that.
Right. Okay.
I shouldn't have you talk more.
Oh, I see. Okay.
About your experience.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've talked on this on the show before.
Yeah, we went deep. We went deep.
You know, I was go to episode like 74 or whatever when I was, there when I was on talks. Here. That, the first time I was on this show.
You on the show. That's not when I was there.
Lord.
Hear it?
So anyway, back to, so the lady's name is Carla Harris.
Carla Harris.
Who did the TED Talk.
Did the TED Talk.
And it's called How to Find the Person Who Can Help You Get Ahead at Work. But in the talk, you're right. She does talk about sponsors.
Sponsors, yeah. Because she kind of like says, the difference between a sponsor and a mentor is someone who's mentoring you is someone who's going to be talking to you about things to do and what, you know, and just give you advice about your career that you can go to at any time, just to, you know, to vent about things, ask questions about things, and not necessarily look, you know, and feel comfortable to look stupid asking certain questions. Mm-hmm. Not that people look stupid, but some people feel they do if they ask questions. And the sponsor, the way she's kind of like setting it up is someone who has built up the enough political capital mm-hmm. in your career at your company industry to go to bat for you right. and feel comfortable.
Somebody who can lobby for you. So
yeah. In those right. meetings where they're talking about, okay, who's going to get the next promotion, right. gig, whatever, and right. that person is outwardly supporting you and mm-hmm. saying in the room, no, Chris is the guy. Let me tell you why. Right. So they're willing to put their chips on the table
yeah.
on your behalf.
Yeah, for
the,
you.
The interesting thing that I grabbed from this mm-hmm. was she learned as you get up in Wall Street, let's just use that as an example, because it's similar to our business mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. As you get up in the industry, you get invited to the table.
Yep.
Right? And so it could be us, like, mm-hmm. now we're co-EPs, right? When you're just a staff, you're just never going to the meetings. Now, all of a sudden, you go to the meetings, right? For example. Mm-hmm. So, for example, what I grabbed out of that was she sat down at this table with all the bigwigs, right, on Wall Street, and names would pop up about who mm-hmm. should get what next mm-hmm. position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And which is what they do with mm-hmm. it. Who should mm-hmm. get bumped up? Mm-hmm. Who's coming mm-hmm. back next mm-hmm. year? Right? Mm-hmm. All
sure.
that shit, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they, what I gathered from that was, oh, you need to attach yourself to one of the people sitting at yeah. this table.
Yeah.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Who can help you move up.
Yep.
Right.
It could
exactly
be a small
it.
Up.
Exactly.
Or it could be a big up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean?
Because that person has the power.
Right.
They're at the table. They have a certain amount of power. Mm-hmm. And they can leverage that to help you in some right. way. Now, the problem is a lot of these tables at times end up being, and this woman is African-American, mm-hmm. and we didn't specify that.
Which is amazing.
Woman.
And she's been out there
right.
for like 30
right.
years.
So you yeah. can imagine the first time she came into that room, she's probably the only one. Probably maybe the only woman right. and or only black person or some right. combination of the two.
Because this is in the 80s, late 80s.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. So she's sitting there in the room, and it's a bunch of white dudes, and I can guarantee you when certain people's names comes up, they're going to look out for their boys.
Right.
Or whoever they're golfing with. Whoever they're golfing with.
Oh, she's fucking good
fantastic.
Did she have to be?
I'd give her my money right now.
See, that's the point she made in the piece. She had these three things about what you got to do, and she was like, you have to not only find out who can be a sponsor, mm-hmm. which is, like you said, who has the power, who has the, as she calls it, who has the juice to
right.
make something happen.
Right.
And then you got to make sure that they're familiar with your work and you.
Right.
Because a lot of times I think in Hollywood, you know, it's something that, like, I've been guilty of. People might know me, but they might not be familiar with my work.
Right.
And they got to be familiar with your work to say, you can do X. Or you can't do X.
Right.
Or, wow, that's someone who I read their script. And you know what? If they can do this, I feel comfortable recommending them for anything.
Right.
Because this fucking blew me away. Or if they read and go, the motherfucker's not ready yet.
But see, here's what I found is, especially in the last year, Chris and I kind of made this little pact at the beginning of last year that we would work more with asking people for shit.
Okay.
Right?
Fair.
And one of the things that I made a plan with is like my number one plan of attack, because I don't do goals anymore. I make plans, right? For me.
Yep.
Is my number one plan was to change the perception that people have of me.
Okay.
Right? The perception that I know of when I meet people, everybody know every time they talk, like I just got back from the shoot, mm-hmm. right? Where I was mm-hmm. directing mm-hmm. and producing. Mm-hmm. And so the perception to people is, oh, he's always working. He's a producer mm-hmm, level mm-hmm, writer mm-hmm, and all these mm-hmm. other things.
He doesn't need anything.
I don't need shit. And so I had to change the perception and mm-hmm. let people know, yes, I'm doing these things,
but I'm still willing. I need a sponsor to bump me up.
Right. I'm still willing to do these things, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest thing that I've changed and adjusted. And And the proof is now in the pudding. Now it's starting to come to fruition. Mm-hmm. Now UTA is hitting me. Now it's like all these people are coming to me, you know, because I put it out there for people to know that I'm willing. You know what I mean?
Got it.
So I think that's important.
Yeah. But that's a big thing because, you know, perception, people, you know, people always say, particularly out here, they say it everywhere. And I think she was saying it too. It's like, you got to fake it till you make it.
Right.
And the whole thing about that is you have to look like you're doing well. And if you look like you're doing well, then people will assume you are doing well because they
that was a trap you got into.
Right. People don't know.
People see my office. They see my cool car I drive. Yeah.
They're like, he's set. He's good. Yeah. He wouldn't want to work on this thing that I'm doing over here. Da, da, da. And
he wouldn't be a staff writer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, no. So the perception. So, yeah, that's the big thing. Letting people know what you can do. What you say, what you're willing to do.
Right.
You know, because. I mean, this thing that I'm doing in Atlanta, it's like the guy who's, you know, like he was excited that I asked him to do this.
Right.
You know, and it's like.
But he's a perfect ally you need, the perfect sponsor.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Somebody who specializes in helping people to do that.
Well, the listeners, because I mean, some of your listeners are probably like, they got a couple scripts they have, and they're sitting there and they're like, yeah, I understand everything y'all are saying, but how do I find, get, acquire, meet a sponsor? And I'm like, I don't know if I even have a good answer for you.
Well, for instance, when I was up there shooting this week.
What's up there?
I'm in San Francisco, Sacramento. We were shooting this big concert scene for the movie that I'm
doing. That's right. You mentioned that.
And so they gave me this kid to be my assistant. And he's a young actor. Mm-hmm. His name is LaMondo. Shout out to Mondo. And he was very, very, like, every time there was a break. So, you know, here's what I'm doing. I would love to, you know, anything I could do. Mm-hmm. He was always trying to pick my brain or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I woke up this morning. He sent me a text saying, Hill, you know, I learned so much just hanging around you and working with you. You know, I would love for you to be my mentor, right?
Mm.
And I thought, that's not how I want to help somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I want somebody who just sticks around and just can tell that I am their mentor. If that makes
if you have to have this formal conversation,
yeah,
like,
it's not,
you're my mentor and I'm your mentee.
Right.
It needs to happen organically.
It has to be, and so that's where I was going. As you guys see, sometimes, you know, you've been on the show for a long. I have young kids come in here all the time and sit in the podcast, and sometimes I put them on the mic, and they all like, oh, we would love for you to be my mentor. And I'm like, you just need to stick around.
Yeah.
You just need to keep being here.
It's almost like they have to, like, you as the mentor need to see something in them where you're like, okay, I know how to help you.
Right.
Because some people, sometimes, like, I just had a young lady send me her script and I read it over the holidays and it's a period piece and set in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that's what she's looking for.
Right.
And it's someone that, and it's like, I can read your script and give you notes, but I can't tell you how you can personally break into the business. I don't know how you personally are gonna do that.
Yeah.
So people are looking for a roadmap sometimes.
Exactly.
I think they're looking
for an easy way in to me.
And you also
always looking for an easy way in because they know it's hard. And the thing is that I think the worst thing about this industry is you hear these stories about, well, so-and-so's roommate called me up and, you know, like so-and-so's roommate, you know, from USC is now agent at CAA and that's how I got in.
You hear it all
and
the time.
Yeah. That shit happens all the time. And it's like, you know, like those stories I think get out are also people who just get plucked out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's like those stories get out, I think, to do two things. They are there to kind of like discourage certain people and they're there to encourage certain people. But, at the same time, there's still stories that get out. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is there's such rarities.
So rare.
There's so many people. I mean, I don't think people know like how many, the town chews up so many people.
They come off the bus
every day. They come out here all the time. They have these dreams from all over the globe.
And in all professions. I don't care if you're an actor, stuntman, whatever. Yeah,
whatever it is.
Producer.
And, you know, and it's really hard to get, it's you know, the thing is once you get in, like even at that point, it's hard to stay in. Because you got to like keep doing work in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And
see, because you're only as good as your last thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that people, I've seen all, I see him to get you this book, the Tribe of Mentors book. This guy's talking about you don't learn a lot from easy success.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because
you don't know what happened to get you there.
Yeah.
And it's like, and not saying you got to wait 10 years, 20 years, something like that, but it's like, But I meet people all the time, and I met a friend of mine the other day in the street, and he was like, yeah, my boss, like, he was like, I can tell he's the kind of person who he gambled on a few things early and got to where he is. So now he doesn't know how to deal with setbacks. He doesn't know how to deal when people tell him mm-hmm. no about yeah. certain things.
Well, you learn more from your mistakes than you do from the things that just sort of went, you know, yeah. seamlessly, and like, oh yeah, then we won an Oscar. It's like, okay. Yeah.
But see, that is why, and we've all known or met people like this. I've never met anybody, whether they're an actor, whether they're a writer, producer, director, who got in really quickly and maintained it.
There you go.
Yeah, get in like that,
I totally agree.
2 years, maybe 3.
Look at the Napoleon Dynamite gentleman. What was his name?
What's his name?
Remember it, but he was everywhere for a while, right? Even did a movie with Will Ferrell. Mm-hmm. I had a buddy of mine who ended up in an acting class with him.
Oh, yeah, the Ice movie he did with Will Ferrell. Yeah,
yes, right. Yeah, I can't remember the actor's name. Forgive me.
Hedder.
Hedder. Mm-hmm. We'll call him Hedder. Mm-hmm. So he ended up in an acting class with a friend of mine, mm-hmm. and he's like, and Hedder admitted, he's like, yeah, I ended up all these movies. I don't really know how to act. Like, I don't really know how to do this. You know, I was just sort of like, Napoleon Dynamite was a specific thing, and right. I just sort of did that, but I don't have a range.
He was kind of being himself probably in that
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, I don't have a range. I don't, right. you know, so I'm trying to work on my craft now.
Yeah, because people, see, the thing is that Napoleon Dynamite role is such a specific character mm-hmm. that they're assuming that he had to create that through the techniques of acting right. craft.
It's like Vince Vaughn and Swingers to an extent, but he
right,
can act.
Right,
but you know
right,
my point.
Right.
You know
well, see, Vince Vaughn is a similar case, because if you look at his career, mm-hmm. he did Swingers, mm-hmm. and then he was offered like all these movies. He was in like a Jurassic Park type right. of movie, and
he's always
stuff.
Playing that character.
And he mm-hmm. had this thing, mm-hmm. and his career kind of stalled.
Right.
And then you know, and I don't say he went away, but he didn't know what movies to choose. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like the and you know,
Wedding Crasher brought him back.
He was right. you know yeah, I mean? Right. he was right. lucky with mm-hmm. something, yeah, like that. And he, right. and, then he,
and then he did a couple Christmas movies, like Four right. Christmases or something. And, right. like there were a couple ring. Like I don't know with Santas and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
He did some Christmas. But then to me, he was in that second season of True Detective,
mm-hmm. right?
Which mm-hmm. which no one watched. But he's actually really good in it.
Oh, he's great,
because people didn't expect. I mean, I'm watching.
He's
and
not
I'm like,
a bad actor.
He's no.
I was using him as an example of somebody you see and you don't know anything about him previously,
right?
Right, you never even right. seen Vince right. that I remember before Swingers.
No.
And but his character was so specific to his way of talking, his mm-hmm. staccato and mm-hmm. his fast paced,
yeah.
and you know all that stuff. It was like, who is this guy? We yeah. gotta have him
mm-hmm. yeah.
in this so next thing, next but we want thing, that guy
again. He's like,
we want that same guy.
Probably like, what did I do to do that?
Exactly.
You know,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, I can't recreate
just,
it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, I was just doing my thing.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's yeah. it's but the thing is, you know, that's but again, it all kind of goes back to we've seen about, like, you know, this what's this woman's name again? The
Harris
about. People got to be familiar with your work.
Absolutely.
Because that's how they know they can recommend you to do things.
So mm-hmm. how do we help our listeners? And so how do people become familiar with your work?
I mean, to me, I think what, you know, what's her name? Put the thing up. Lee Jessup put the thing up that you tweeted. Mm-hmm. On her page, yeah. she had like these.
She just put us on her top list.
Top list.
The podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So,
that's fantastic.
Yeah,
I know. It's great. It's really good. Shout out to Lee, but she had those top tier, you know, like writing things mm-hmm. on there. Like these, obviously Austin and Nichols,
right.
but she had like four or five other ones too. Right. And then she had second tier ones.
Yeah, that was really cool, because you usually just see Sundance, Austin Tribeca, whatever the fuck.
Yeah,
Nichols,
it, you know,
that's it. But she was like, no, but there's a couple more.
Yeah,
who are coming up.
Yeah,
you know.
I was looking at, you know, some agent stuff the other day. Mm-hmm. I was just like looking them up online, see what would hit. And some people you would see, they would say, you know, like, so-and-so signed like a writer from this contest.
Right.
And it's like, okay, that's the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I mean, like, I was talking with a friend of mine. She's doing a movie called The Last Black Man in San Francisco. And
what the hell is that about?
When is it set?
I think set now. Like
okay.
A, like
okay.
A current film. it's based on an article. It's based on, well, because it's basically, you know how like the rents in San Francisco are just so crazy that it's
pushed, and it's gentrified.
Gentrified right, to no end. Right.
Because I'm gonna tell you, I haven't been there. Forgive me. Keep your thought.
Yeah.
I haven't been there in about 6, maybe 7 years. Mm. The last time I was there, I usually do my thing. I usually go riding at Cafe Flora, which is like right on Market, mm-hmm. right over by Castro, mm-hmm. in the gay area,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll walk across the street right by Castro and go to this Orphan Andy's and have my pancakes. And then I'll walk down the street on Castro to go say hi to all my friends who used to work at the salon I used to
mm-hmm.
work at, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I turn on Castro at 18th, or Market in
and
Castro.
And you're like, I'm on the wrong block.
And I look, and it's just nothing but straight people walking with their babies yep. and whatever. And they're adding on to the sidewalk.
Yep.
Now, this is six, seven mm-hmm. years ago.
So you can imagine I don't know what's happened
the
fuck. Since.
I was like, where did all the gay people go? In the mm-hmm. Castro. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was like, what the fuck happened here?
It's justified as hell. And so, but we were talking, and she was like, oh, you know, like, are you in the Sundance thing? Or I was like, no, I mean, I've applied. I just applied this year. She's like, oh, but she's like, well, the thing about those programs is those things vouch for you. If
yeah.
you get in, then you're vouched for by right. the industry. Cause then the people who are in the industry don't know how to, or don't have the time or the bandwidth even to vouch for right. writers. Because the thing about being a writer is there's this woman, she wrote this book called Good in the Room that I read like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. I still get her email.
I used to have that.
I forget what she said. But see, she said something. But in her book, she was talking about how what happens a lot with writers mm-hmm. is, and this is a lot more movie writers, because that was her main thing, they come in and they've written a great sample.
Stephanie Palmer.
Yeah, Stephanie right, Palmer. Right,
right. Yeah.
And it's a great sample, but then they're like people that you can't be in the room with.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like psychopaths. Mm-hmm. Or
they have no personality.
No personality.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or they can't talk about themselves. Right. Themselves
right. Or they can't pitch or they can't talk about the project right. And it's kind of like that's the other part of the vetting process mm-hmm. because even when you, because if you get into one of these like Sundance,
they've already interviewed like you. That,
they've interviewed yeah. you
to see if you're normal.
But you've gone through that lab thing where they're interacting with you the way it's right. a very similar relationship
but
between an
at
executive.
At the same time, though, I will say they're not a meal ticket because I know people who've gone through these labs and right. stuff. And I'm one of them. I went right. through the Film Independent Lab last year, right. or maybe it was the year before
and
that.
I was a finalist at Sundance.
You know, it depends on how the lab is run and right. it depends on who they bring in right. to be your like guest speaker right. mentors or whatever.
Because right. Sometimes there's somebody hot working, sometimes somebody from 5, 10 years ago.
Right. Or they bring in people who like, you know, who talk a big game like, yeah, I really want to help you, but they don't really connect with the correct. Program to really say, hey, give me those women's email mm-hmm. addresses. I'm in this other thing right now at Women in Film. It's called mm-hmm. Insight. It's all women of color. Writers, directors, producers, all people that Women in Film have vetted through because I got a scholarship when I was at UCLA right. from Women in Film. Mm-hmm. So those of us women of color who got scholarships from UCLA were invited to be in this Insight program.
Right.
And so we had, I think it was Stephanie Elaine that came mm-hmm. and talked to us. It's great. But what happens is we have these little group meetings with someone who could potentially be a mentor or a sponsor, right. but the lab running it doesn't really connect us. Even mm. the last thing we had with this director, I can't remember her name, but we had this TV director come in. She was telling us all about, and she was like, I want every one of you guys' email addresses. I'm like, cool. But somebody has to be the go-between to right. do that. And these programs I find are somewhat lacking that they don't,
there's no follow
bridge,
through.
They don't bridge that gap. Like, either they don't take it seriously that the guest sponsor, mentor who was with us, working with us that day mm-hmm. really wants our email addresses. Mm-hmm. Or they just forget about it, whatever. And I'm like, should I remind them that she won her email address? I mean, I'm like,
Yeah, look, that's, you know what? It's the, you know what we should say for our thing? It's like, be bold.
Hmm.
Because that's what you have to do. Look, I don't have any qualms about walking up to someone and it took me a while to get here and saying, I want your email. Can I have your email? Because that's such a very... it's an easy way for someone to say, here it is, and they can give you a fake one, or they can never respond.
Kind of like a phone number. Like, girls
it's,
bar.
It's so easy. It's like, here it is. I mean, like, I tell people, I don't know if I told everyone the story about how I met Glenn Mazzara. I'll just tell the story. So he was on a panel at the Writers Guild called Writing Your Best Spec. This is back when people could still do specs. This is like right before The Walking Dead came out. Right.
I might have been there.
It's a long time ago. And I recognized there were four panelists there. It was Anthony Sparks, Glenn, this woman, I forget her name now, damn it, she was on Buffy and on Battlestar, very famous writer too, and someone else was there, and
I know you're thinking you about Buffy, with Buffy and
Battlestar, yeah, and she's on
I follow her on Twitter, I know, Jane Espenson,
yeah,
she pulled it out,
love her. Great, so, but I recognized Glenn from The Shield, because I was just watching The Shield, and I was like, oh fuck, who's this guy, and I had just watched one of his episodes, So when I walked to him, I said, oh, Glenn, I'm a big fan. Your episode was this. I just remember watching it. It was great. And he, like, all these people were there mobbing him because, at the time, you know, it was one of the first times that I started getting involved in the Guild more. And he was like, oh, you remember my shit? I was like, yeah, yeah. And he's like, what's going on? I was like, I have this pilot. I would love for you to read it. And he was like, I'm really busy. I was like, just read the first 10 pages. Mm-hmm. If you don't like it, don't call, then don't email me back. And I won't email you about it. And he was like, oh, so you give me that out. Like, if I don't like it, you're not going to pester me? Mm-hmm. Cool. He was like, here's my email. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll send it to you tomorrow.
See, Glenn is also one of the most approachable people.
Yeah.
But at the time, I didn't know that. Yeah, sure. I didn't know that. And that same night, I did the same thing with Anthony Sparks. I said, hey, and he was moderating, and everyone was mobbing him. And, he was I think he had just got on that J.J. Abrams show, one with Boris Kojo at the time.
Mm-hmm. Undercovers.
Undercovers, yeah. And, so Glenn, the next day, I sent him this pilot, and he got back to me maybe like 6 to 8 weeks later. Mm-hmm. But he called
me. That's a long time.
But he called me.
Yes, but most people would have given up
on the 6 to 8 weeks. Yeah.
You feel me?
Yeah.
That's good. Keep going. No, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, because, he called me. He called, because I put my number on the script. Right. He called me. Said, hey, Chris, is this Chris Derrick? I was like, yeah, who's this? He was Glenn Mazzara. I read your script.
Oh, shit.
I really fucking liked it. Well, and he started telling me all this stuff. He started telling me other about people who he wanted to send it to and everything like that. And he was like, so that's how he and I became friends, because I just was like, I was always very judicious about what I asked him. Like, I wasn't always pestering about questions and small stuff. I was like, I only want to ask him something that I really can't find the answer to, or is there somebody else like lower else I could get to before I go to him? Because right around that time when he read it, we were talking back and forth at that time. He just then got bumped up to run Walking Dead, and he was like, "You don't know about the shitstorm the reason why I'm running it, And he was like, "So I can't bring you on, really. It's just too much politics." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "I get it." But he was honest with me and upfront about that, and we've always been cool since then. And but that's one of the ways.
So that's one way.
So you have to be bold. I mean, look, if you go up to people, people go to the femme fatale thing, that's the way. I remember I did that too. And just people will respond to your boldness if you give them an out about the communication.
So maybe not read your whole script, but hey, just read the first 10 pages. That's a way.
Yeah, that's one way. Go ahead, you were about to.
But your 10 pages had better be
fucking super, good. They had super to be solid, really good.
And not just read in your with your friends or whatever, but you have some outside opinions on it. So okay, so let's recap. So we've talked about contests are a way. Make sure you vet all your contests. There's a lot of scams out there.
A lot of them. What contests are they?
Look at past. What's that?
And let's tell them what the top contests are.
I mean, for me, I've entered Austin. I'll just talk to the ones I've entered. Austin, Sundance Episodic Lab, Film Independent, which I got into. I stay away from Screencraft. I'm gonna be quite honest with you, because
you see John and Craig go in about Screencraft.
Yeah. Because for me, I entered one of their contests last year in terms of getting funding for a film. Like they were like $30,000, we'll fund your film. I was like, all right, cool, that sounds awesome. Then when I see that Shia LaBeouf is one of the semifinalists or quarterfinalists, or whatever, I was like, okay, you guys are not really trying to help. I don't do like the final drafts contest, whatever. I mean, just find the ones that kind of like speak to you, and then look at who past winners were. Then figure out, okay, they won. Then what happened?
And I would say Slam Dance, because Slam Dance
is good.
I think it makes you like an associate member of the guild if you win that.
Which
is good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they had the thing.
I've been in Slam Dance before. For like a short script, I've done Slam Dance.
And there's actually a couple of the competitions that if you place first, second, right. third, that can help you to become a caucus member, mm-hmm. which is like a associate member or something.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. If you're a caucus member, you know, then there's the availability of you to get invited to certain kind of guild right. events and meet right. other
people. You could be a member. You could, you just can't vote.
Right.
It's the only
right.
thing. Yeah. Right. Right. You don't get the screeners.
Because yeah. the thing that people don't realize is about going to the guild events that I've seen is, yes, there's panelists there who are these high profile people, mm-hmm. but there's other like right. smart writers in the audience.
Talk to the person sitting next to you.
See, you find out who they are. You know,
because
I remember yeah. I saw, I went to that little thing that Craig Mazin puts on, that, you know, little seminar he does. Mm-hmm. And I think there's two black people in the room. Mm. Aside of me, so it's only three of us there, and I was like, "This is not cool."
Right.
But one of them was Aaron Rahan Thomas.
Thomas, I was about to say Thomas.
And, yeah. You know, and he sat right next to me, and mm-hmm. he and I were talking a little bit. You know, I mean, he's a little standoffish, and you know, we just talking, and I was like, "Hey man, can we like exchange emails or Facebook?" He's like, "Yeah man, just hit me up." You know, because he's my name, blah blah.
Right.
And I've like talking to him a few times, like, but now he's running SWAT. So it's like, hey, right. you know, that's, and I stayed in touch with him, you know, off and on through a lot of stuff, just to like stay in his ear because this is the thing about being bold. It's like, and the perseverance, again, like the thing with Gunner, I was like six to eight weeks later, mm-hmm. it's like, what you don't know about anybody is you don't know like when you, there's something to do,
right. mm-hmm.
you know, like, mm-hmm. hey, yes, I'm doing this panel because I agreed, but I have like a script that's due, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I don't have time to read no else's shit for that's like 6 weeks.
He was about to start running a show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the midst of drama, by the
drama.
Way. So,
drama.
Google it if you don't know.
I know.
That was good. Yeah. That should have been like 5-6 months when the show shut down.
Glenn is an ally.
Yes.
Glenn is
a perfect ally. Yeah. You
so,
know what I mean?
But the thing is that if you go to those events, there's other people in the audience.
Let's sort of distinguish the events, okay? Right. Because there's two types going on at the Writers Guild. There's events that are for members, caucus members, associate members, whatever, right. that are free. You know, we just get the emails mm-hmm. and we RSVP. Yeah. And if you...
First come, first serve.
Mm-hmm. You show up. Now, the Writers Guild Foundation right. has events also where you pay like $20, right. $25 and you... Right. listen to a TV writer of their, you know, whoever they
pick.
You
get to see John
panel,
and Craig or whatever.
Panel, whatever. Right. Yeah, I mean, they do, John and Craig do right. their live show or whatever. Yeah. But they do other things. Like, I think Wendy Calhoun just did right. a thing with them or whatever. Right. So, if you can't get into the guild, at least the Writers Guild Foundation gives mm-hmm. you something. Hang out at that, this is for those of you in LA. If you guys are not in LA, then this might not apply. But hang out at that Writers Guild Foundation library. It's mm-hmm. free for everyone.
Yep. Yeah.
First floor.
Go in there,
the
read scripts, because I need to go in there and read, what is it? I got to read. Crap, I can't remember. Oh, The Count of Monte Cristo. Okay.
I love that.
I saw it on TV over mm-hmm. the holidays. And I was like, I forgot how good this was.
With really Guy Pearce, good. The one with Guy Pearce?
Yes. Yeah. And Jim Caviezel.
Jim Caviezel.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Not Jim Cassavetes. That's the different thing. Okay. And a young Superman. Young.
Christopher Reeve?
No.
Henry Cavill?
Henry Cavill is the son. Henry Cavill is the son who gets kidnapped and the count has to save him. It's real cute. Anyway, so I got to go because I'm working a period piece in that time frame. Like, I need to go read that script. Mm-hmm. It's not available online. Mm-hmm. It's before PDFs and whatnot. Anyway, you never know who you're going to meet in
there. There's another place if you want to actually own your script. Mm-hmm. It's called Script City.
Mm.
You can actually buy the script for like $20-$25 or whatever. You know, they have almost everything.
But at the same time, you won't get the communal effect of being in.
You
the,
won't,
in
but some like for me, I like to highlight through. I like to grab
stuff.
Yeah.
What I do is I take notes. Right. I take you know, because the Writers Guild Foundation won't let you take the scripts out, so you have to, you know, and some of them are bound.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you read it, and then I'll just sit there on my laptop and take notes on the things that I find.
But now you can get them on PDF mm-hmm. in
and
the
I may,
form.
I may
so,
do that, but I mean, you got to be in these environments where you can meet.
I like that. Should we just take that?
If you can afford it, there's like where screenwriters do that, the work writing type situation, like Hatchery Press or mm-hmm. the Metaphor Club just started in
God, I forgot about the Hatchery.
The Metaphor Club is down in It's just open. It's Black Run, mm-hmm. and it really is open to Black Run. It's close to USC.
Oh, it's in Leimert Park. Is it in Leimert Park?
I think so. Yeah, you probably saw. Some
Yeah. I was invited to like the opening.
I went to like one of their events there where they had a couple black male TV writers. Mm-hmm. And it was cool. It's a nice little space. Mm-hmm. So if you're down there and you can afford to like do that, you can, again, you're gonna sort of commune with other people who are writing.
It's important. You were talking about being in the audience, and I always talk about this that. The first year we did, like every year we do the NAACP Image Award nominations mm-hmm. for the Black mm-hmm. Committee at the Writers mm-hmm. Guild. And the first year we did it, I co-hosted it with Ben Corey Jones, who's now a showrunner on Boomerang, right, with Lena. And so, the next year we did it again, and Barry Jenkins mm-hmm. was on it for Moonlight. Mm-hmm. And he said in the audience, he said, you know what's funny? He said, I sat here last year in the audience. And mm-hmm. now here I am mm-hmm. up here. Mm-hmm. And I was like, see, that's why it's important for you to go. Because sometimes people always ask me, oh, do you go to events? I was like, I go to a ton of events. But for me, I'm always about getting one piece of information. Mm-hmm. If I could just get one more thing that I didn't know mm-hmm. or yep. learn some or other way to person. Look at it.
Meet
whatever.
One quality right. person. Right. Okay, so this is the other thing. I did, speaking of John August and Craig Mazin, who do script notes, they do live events. Right. So this is back like
they have the
5 years,
screenwriting
5 years ago.
Period.
I went to their superhero spectacular. It was a live thing. They had little snacks beforehand, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm just in there and getting my little snacks or whatever. I turn around and this woman is like, "Hi, I'm Aline. How are you doing?"
It's Aline Brosh McKenna,
right?
Oh, interesting.
So she's like, you know, tell me about yourself. And I told her I was like, you know, ex Air Force. I just came off working on Army Wives. Da da da. You know, I'm having issues with representation. She was like, give me your information. You're the most interesting person I've met in here today.
Your story is very interesting.
So I can, you know, kind of, you know, connect with her, not push you on email. She was like, I'm going to set you up with, and so she set me up with a meeting with Spellman, who was on Good Wife at the time.
Okay.
Nicole Tramble Spellman.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So we kind of sat, it was just really cool because the three of us sat, these are both A-list, you
wow,
know, writers.
All
of my
three opinion. Of you.
Yeah.
Really?
Sat, like had a little meal over in Melrose mm-hmm. or whatever and had, you know, just talk about what my next step should be.
Awesome.
Aline, I give her credit. She was the one, because I was originally going to do my World War II mm-hmm. Women pilot thing as like a feature. She was like, no.
Make it a show.
That's a series.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? She's like, that's a series. So mm-hmm. then I went and did it.
Yeah.
You know?
But see, I'm going to say one thing on there.
So that was an accidental sort of running into
you
someone.
Wrote a kick-ass script that I read over the holiday,
thank
too.
You.
Good script.
I was gonna say, okay, that's something that I read in a book one time about how people could. You see something that you missed there. I don't know if you caught it, but it's like when people are gonna introduce you to someone,
mm-hmm.
you need to ask them if they can be at that meeting, if they can come to the coffee, if they can come to the breakfast, if they can come to the dinner.
Right.
Because that way, it's like that first meeting with mm-hmm. someone new to you could be like a little. It's just a little awkward. It's kind of like a blind date.
Yeah.
But three. She's coming in there. But the thing is, she met you already.
Yeah.
You
know? Also, Aline was ensconced in features at the time. This is before Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Right. So in terms of TV and being a TV writer, she was like, well, that's not my wheelhouse right now. Mm-hmm. But I know someone who's on The Good Wife, Nicole Tramble Spellman, mm-hmm. who's also a black woman. She's like, let me bring her into this, and we can powwow.
And the thing about Aline is she's obviously smart that way. I gotta make
is that
this
Malcolm's
work.
Wife?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that's the thing too. It's like, I remember this guy was saying in his book I was reading, he was like, always, if someone hook you up with a meeting, see if they can be there. Mm. It's very tricky to do that, but see if they can do there because they can make the conversation easier. If that person's met you and knows you, it's like they introduce you first. Oh, this is, hey man, what's up? Oh, mm-hmm. this is someone I want to meet. This is a guy I was telling you about. This is a girl I was telling you about. And you guys sit down, you can talk, and you can, and then you can start asking about them. And it's not this back, it's not this
right.
binary conversation.
Right.
And it makes it easier for you to make a better impression.
I like it.
Way.
But here's
you can be,
it's,
go ahead.
It's hard. You can't
always here's
get that
the
happen.
Other key of the story. When you're in a situation and an A-list screenwriter just happens to turn around and say, hi, I'm Aline,
mm-hmm.
you know,
Be ready to have
a conversation with this person.
Yes.
Have your sort of super short, you know, like 2 minutes under. Yeah. I didn't talk her ear up. I was like, maybe even a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, yeah, I'm this, I'm this, I'm this, and this. And she was like, you're the most interesting person I've met in this party so far. and she was like, and then she started introducing me to other people that she's like, oh my gosh, you guys got to meet Linnell. She did da 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 da. And because I gave her something pitchable, because it's like, oh, you got to meet Linnell. She just came out of the Air Force. She worked on Army Wives. Da 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 da. That was easy for her to sort of transition me to meet. Oh, here are these other people.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing.
And you were fresh off the show at that time.
Yes,
that's the thing too. It's like, be ready to know how to pitch your story quickly.
Practice it in the mirror if you need to. Like, or
because people need to know, because that again is about what I was saying earlier about, you know, are they vetting you? Do you come in? Yes, you wrote a good script, but can you come in and like you said, talk about yourself, but do it in a way that's like pitching. Like it's all about sales and sales is not. People don't realize that, but it's the product you're selling is you.
Yep.
Well, let me say something. So, I had a conversation with Mick Betancourt, the showrunner of my show. We were talking about imposter syndrome.
Mm.
So he connected me with another one of his friends who is a huge director in TV who had it. And Mick and him had a conversation, and Mick told him, "You could be the biggest director in TV if you embraced the fact of where you come from."
Okay.
So did you lean in with the fact, I'm this dude who went to jail and I did this and I did this. That's why I'm such a good director for
Interesting.
You. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And now he is one of the biggest directors in TV, right? And so that person called me and we had a long discussion about imposter syndrome because I told him I had a moment in our room.
Yeah.
Where I was sitting there and they were philosophizing about philosophy and I was like, I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. You know what I mean? And luckily I caught myself and went, oh my God, I'm the only one in the room who was there in the 80s into this scene though. And I had to find my strength back while I listened to this philosophy going on. And so he helped me lean into that. Right. Having a conversation with him.
That was your superpower.
Right. I didn't realize
90s
it.
Education.
I didn't realize it, but as soon as that happened, my shift shifted in the room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And things started getting on the board even faster from my point of view once I realized what my strength was.
Yeah.
You
and focus on that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, other people know, the philosophy of Descartes or whatever. Right. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't. No, it's not my thing.
What, Machiavelli, you don't know about the Enlightenment? What's wrong with you?
Machiavelli, Rousseau.
The Prince?
I don't know all this. Okay?
You gotta know that.
I didn't get that type of education. So you let them have that.
That's autodidactic.
You let them have that as their superpower. And if that comes into play on your show, great. Mm-hmm. But you bringing your education about the 80s and 90s, punk scene or whatever, you play to that.
Right.
And that doesn't mean you're not at home Googling Descartes and Machiavelli.
Right.
Because you can do that on the breaks in the room and that shit you don't understand. You should be Googling. Right. Okay, let me catch up.
Yeah. So I would just sit there writing shit down going, I don't know what the fuck that is.
Yeah. But you're going to catch up.
Let me see what that is.
I mean,
I can have a conversation later on.
Mm-hmm.
But you can fall into imposter syndrome
really quick,
easy
for
in
sure.
this industry.
I felt it because listen,
you're the only black person in the room
for
or
sure.
whatever, you know,
or you've been plucked from nowhere
right.
and been given a staff writer job and you're like, I've never even worked in this business
right.
before, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, I mean,
you had to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
Everybody,
I had it. Yeah.
So you feel that all the time because for me, it's like when I'm doing something new.
Mm-hmm.
I feel it because I'm like it doesn't matter what I've done. It that doesn't matter. It's like I don't know if I can do it. I always feel when I approach a project that I haven't done before, that type of thing, that I'm always like, I don't know how to do this.
That's the excitement of it to me.
I really don't know how to do this, and it's scary as shit. It's always
you should be anything
scary.
Worth doing that's worthwhile doing. Right. Is
it should
be scary.
Scary, yeah. But the thing is, but the thing is, it's tricky. A lot of times when you're directing, it's like everyone's looking at you for the answer, and you're like, "Fuck, I don't know the answer right now."
It's okay, and it's okay that you don't know.
It's totally fine. You don't have to know that, and you have to be careful with how you let people know that you don't know that. But what I'm saying is that is what overcomes people a lot in this business, and it's fine, and it's normal, and it's like you have to go through that.
Right.
I don't think there's any time where anybody feels that they don't know what they're doing, and that they shouldn't be there. I feel like that is just what it, I mean, unless you're one of those lazy writers who's constantly on the same type of show over and over again. Like if you jump on
NCIS New Orleans, go to NCIS regular and then go to NCIS LA.
Yeah, if
nothing against
they
those
doing
shows.
It all the way to
nothing
the bank.
Nothing against those
so
shows.
Go ahead and do
nothing
it.
Nothing at all. My mom watches them up one side, down the other.
All the time. But like people, the writers who are on those shows are comfortable doing that thing.
Right.
And you know what? I love the fact that they can do it and make huge money out
of it. And make huge money out of it.
But I just kind of feel like if they are there's someone who we might talk about later, but who might come on the, a guest might come on the show who did this, who made the jump from spending 8 seasons on a procedural and then jumped on to a serialized show that was having problems.
Right.
And,
oh, I think I know who you're talking about.
And they needed fixed.
I know who you're talking about.
And it's like, that's like a, it's not. It's,
that's an art.
It's a, yeah, because the situation is not ideal when you come in. It's, which is like a show that's in problems is different than a show that's even a new show.
Right.
Because then there's like, well, should we cancel this shit?
Right.
If you don't do it right, we're going to cancel. You know, there's a lot of, there's a lot of different pressures, you know?
All right. Well, let's try to bring it back to the TED Talk and the sponsors. So we said contests. We said, you know, labs, approaching people like you did with Glenn. And then what was the other?
Here's something.
Being at events, and being and having your personal story ready.
So when I met this kid the other day, who's going to be my assistant, right, for during while we were shooting, I said to him, he said, is there anything you need me to do? And I says, I have one thing. He said, what? And you've heard me say this, both of you, many times. I said, if I drop it, pick it up. I said, I'm not telling you to be my slave. I'm telling you that. So I went back and gave him an example of when I assisted somebody. And this is my process. So, and you've seen me, even when I'm helping Pam, if she's casting and I'm already a producer, but her casting assistant can't come, Selena can't come, I'm acting like I'm getting coffee.
Yeah.
That's what I do. If I said I'm going to do it, I'm going to treat you like I'm that.
Yeah.
Right? So I gave him an example of something that I worked on with Pamela where I assisted the crap out of her and Cedric the Entertainer turned around and went, man, who is this dude right here? And she went, he's a producer. He's just helping me out. He said, man, we need him on the set. Like that, because I was doing so much shit. You know, and he could see it. People see what's going on. So then I said, when I say if I drop it, pick it up, I just mean help me.
Yeah.
Make it easier for me.
Yeah.
You see, I'm sitting there, I ain't had no water in 30 minutes or an hour. Grab me one.
Yeah.
They're serving lunch and I'm still working. Go grab me a plate.
Be forward thinking and proactive.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Think like a fish.
You know, like start assessing what might he need.
Exactly.
Oh, he's been sitting here a minute. Let me go grab a water.
Exactly. Or that's all I mean.
That's the mistake that a lot of people make is the mistake they make is you think that because you're there to watch. As an assistant,
right. Or that you're
to talk in your ear the whole time,
right? Or to mentor him, like, oh, let me show you how this is going to go, and you're trying to get a job done, so that can come later.
It's not that the whole thing. It's what you said, Linnell. Forward thinking, like the person that is, you know, that you're assisting is. It is you to be anticipating their needs.
Yep.
Right. You need to be able to say, okay, this is what he might
need. You need to be
ahead
of me.
Yeah, right. This is what he might need right now because we're getting ready to run and do this. I might need to get two waters right now. Broiled
in a inner, you know, monologue or dialogue with like, should it be this shot? Should we wide? Should we shoot it this way? I mean, you see the wheels turning in my head. Then you go get the lunch, or you go get the snack, or you go get my almonds, or get my water, whatever. And I, if you facilitate the fact that I'm thinking so hard, I don't even have time to even.
I never sat down. You never sit down when you direct, Chris.
No,
you never sit down, Linnell.
No,
you know what I mean. I didn't sit down the entire fucking day.
I mean,
you know what I mean. So yeah,
you know, you might sit down when they're like changing around.
No, I never sat down, but
even then, you don't want to because
you might at lunch.
You might be
right.
If you're not powwowing with the DP.
This is what, you know, someone told me they have this thing in Europe called French hours where they keep the food out all day.
Yes, that's starting to do that here now.
10, but you shoot 10 hours instead of 12, and it's basically the food's out all day, and you just go and eat when you, they're setting that light.
Oh, interesting.
Give me 10 minutes, I'm going to go eat, as opposed to taking that break for lunch. Because the thing that I actually would prefer that, because what I hate about taking the lunch break is
the momentum.
Yes.
Well, there's
a
momentum for everybody, but for me personally, I can't think about eating. I'm thinking about what we haven't done yet.
Oh, for sure. Right, yeah. For sure. Oh, what shots didn't I get? Yeah. Or how do I catch up? Or I'm behind on my day or whatever. Yeah, it's a lot happening.
Is it better to turn around or should we just keep going from the
pit? I know.
So it's hard for me to sit there and eat. And people, and I'm like, when I eat, I got to eat really fast and people want to talk. I'm like, I don't have time to talk to nobody.
Because everybody comes over and still want to ask you questions.
And you're thinking about the next shot, the next thing, the next scene.
Do we get a cut shit or what are we going to do? And I just kind of feel like, you know what, if I could be and you're hungry during the day. Mm-hmm. You're like, when the fuck is lunch going to be here?
Starving.
When the fuck is, and that's the thing I hate about it too, is that you say to yourself, when the fuck is lunch going to get here?
Mm-hmm.
And there's and maybe an hour before that's happening that you're kind of going, well, fuck, you know, we have to do this before we break for lunch.
Right.
There's all this stuff going on. And maybe you're hungry. And it's like, if the food was always out, you wouldn't have to do that at all. You'd just be like, you know what? He's got to get that. He's got the DP will go, hey, how much do you need? I need 10 minutes. It's really 15 minutes. Which means you can go and grab something to eat and come back and he's not ready yet. You know?
And the funny thing is I've never been on any set, whether I'm producing, directing, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And lunchtime comes, we are at a place where we needed another 20 minutes.
Right.
Almost every time. You know what I mean?
It does not fail.
Yeah. You always stop when you didn't want to.
Oh, I need another shot. We do another take.
Right. Does not fail.
No, I'm going to do it after lunch. And the thing about, the worst thing about that is with acting is, I mean, you know, people come back from lunch and they're slow. They got the itis, and and everyone's gonna get in back into the swing, and it's and also like everyone is detorqued because they want to eat, and it's like, no, I need to get that energy that we just built, the momentum, that groove. The actors could have reached some level of like understanding about the scene that was like they're in the moment for that scene at right then and there that they're not gonna recapture.
Right. Well, the wonderful thing about the French hours I've heard also, because it's 10 hours instead of 12, is that if you show up at 7, then you're going home at 5 and people can spend time with their families.
That's good.
That's, so I've heard a few sets around town have been doing that. So I don't know.
So I talked about this before on another episode. You know, you've seen me. Every time there's a panel that I'm not a part of, even if I put it together, whatever, I always sit in the front row.
Sure.
Here's why. I learned the very first movie that I ever sold was this movie called Blackout, and it's a horror movie. And all of a sudden, I was starting to get asked to be on panels.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget one of the first time I sat and I was sitting with all these like high level writers, right? And my little horror movie that I wrote. And I was sitting there and I looked out into the audience. You know, somebody's talking, and sometimes you're looking at them or you're just looking out across the audience. And I looked across the audience and realized I can only see the people in the first two rows.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, oh, that's a problem. I need to make sure I'm always in a place. Because there are lots of times when you may be on a panel and you're not speaking.
Yeah.
You're just glancing across the room.
Yeah.
So you're going to remember the faces you saw if you see them.
Yep.
So my advice, if you go to a panel or you know an event, try to get close. At least, if you can't get in the front row, because sometimes they're reserved or whatever the fuck. But try to get close so that the people on a panel will recognize your face. So if you see them at the grocery store, you'll be like, hey, I saw you at blah, 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 blah. They'll be like, oh, you're in the front row. You're in the
Right.
You know what I mean? So just think about that. That's something that just...
Well, you know, like, don't treat it like schools that are sitting in the back row for some crazy reason.
And that's the other thing. I never sit in the back because as a black man, I don't want to be in the back.
That's fair.
That's my thing.
Here's the other thing I'll add in terms of like finding a sponsor. It could come from yours, you know, being an assistant at like an agency, a studio to a showrunner or whatever. That's another way in. I would caution you though, if you do get that assistant job.
That's a longer road though.
If you do get that assistant job, and granted, everybody's got to pay their bills and they got, you know, rent and food and whatever to buy. I have a friend of mine who became, I had lunch with him right before the holidays. He's an assistant for a president of a major studio. I won't say which one.
And they get minimum wage, right?
But in the 2 years since he's left UCLA, or maybe it's even three, he has not written a new script.
Oof.
He has not directed anything. And he's primarily directed. He has not directed anything new.
Not good.
His whole focus is dealing with this president.
Not good.
Like forwarding him scripts, answering the emails at all hours, answering the texts, you know, his agenda.
And it's year
travel,
round.
Year round, nonstop.
And it's like a 16-hour day at least.
So I told him, I said, dude, for 2019, I think you need to find another assistant job where you can have time during the day to either do your writing or directing, whatever, because you're getting stale.
It's hard because you get a position with
And furthermore, this guy is not elevating him. This guy is not sponsoring him. Okay. Right. This guy is not going in rooms and being like, hey, I got this really good, you know,
he's never
going
to do that.
No.
He sees you as only assistant.
And he's had 10 of them, who's done the same thing.
Here's the thing. The assistant route is really good if you want to be an executive. If you want to be creative, then it helps if you can be like a writer's assistant, like on a show. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, that's not a job you should be taking.
Right.
It's really not, unless you want to be an executive. It doesn't matter if you got a sweet job to work at some production company or something like that. You're never going to have the time, and everyone's going to see you as you used to be the assistant. I know one person who like moved up to the assistant route from... he's a writer, but and his situation was such a unique situation is that he, same thing, he had an assistant job, couldn't write his own shit for a year and a half, and then what happened is they came up to renegotiate their deal, the studio and that company, and during the time period that they were renegotiating the deal, is a company that was primarily based in New York but had an office here. Mm-hmm. They let the LA executive go because he was fucking up anyway. Mm-hmm. So my friend was just there to answer phone calls for a company that didn't have a deal anymore, or was going to have one, but it was in limbo. So they really could even take scripts.
Right.
So he had 6 months. Where he'd go to the office, collect his check, and maybe answer the phone call a couple times a day.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
And he wrote. And Smart. He wrote two screenplays, like during that time. And because he knew other assistants and stuff like that on the lot, he was able to say, hey, I wrote this. We've been at lunch. Can you read this after me? Mm-hmm. But you know, he would never have had the opportunity unless there was that really weird moment where he was getting paid to not do anything.
Right.
You know, but his own shit.
Right.
But so that's to me I had a job like that one time as an assistant at this film finance company, and I could not do shit. And he wasn't calling me like after hours and stuff like that. But it was like
such once you a, got home, but you it was, were mentally
but it was
drained.
Such a stressful right. job. I mean, we were dealing with like movies collapsing all the time, and we would work on the movie that the Heath Ledger died on.
Oh dear!
All kind of, shit like, and that's like causing everybody panic.
Right.
Yeah,
and that panic.
You're in crisis management.
Yeah,
that's a crisis management.
And we were constantly doing that, getting sued for just so much shit the whole time I was there. And the thing is, that it's like you don't, and it's not affecting you. Like your job, really, but it is, or your livelihood, but you can't like just, but you can't step out of that clothing the minute you walk out the door.
No,
you got to deal with it's just draining as hell. And I remember that time. I mean, I didn't write shit during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't, you know.
Yeah. So it's a double edged sword. Oh, just be careful.
So here's the last thing I want to say about this TED talk with the woman, and we'll put it in the show notes. She had this thing at the end where she was saying, "There's three things that you can ask people to see if they are your sponsor."
Right. You remember what they are?
I don't remember what they are, but she was saying that you ask people to do it, and that there's three responses they'll give you. Is that one? You'll find out that they don't have the juice that they really have.
I remember that.
That was so
on point.
Yes.
So if they're saying no, it's not necessarily because your talent is not there or your abilities are not there. They know I don't have the juice to move you to the next level. And that's true of managers and agents.
For a lot of people. And she said three things, but I remember that
was brilliant.
The person doesn't have the juice and they're never going to admit that they don't have that power. Mm-hmm. And the third thing, I can't remember the person, but the third thing she was like, they might not like you.
least now you know.
That's true.
And at that point, now you know.
And you can like, stop messing with them and move on.
Move on.
Find someone else.
Yeah, because you might get a situation where you might be talking with someone that you know could help you.
Mm-hmm.
But are they going to help you? Mm-hmm. And they may talk a big game that they do help people, blah, blah, blah. But are they actually helping you? And if you ask them the question point blank and they give you the no, there's a reason why.
Yep.
It could be that they don't have the juice or they just don't like you.
Since we're talking about sponsorships, I'm just going to say this because I'm mentor, sponsorship, whatever. In my life, in my career, the people that have helped me have not been my sponsors.
Oh, for sure.
You know, that makes sense. But what I realized is those sponsors and mentors are people that I can go to for advice when I need them.
Mm-hmm.
They may not give me a
for
job,
sure. For sure.
But that to me is just as powerful.
It is valuable.
When I needed it.
Having those people you know what I mean? Turn to.
Oh, completely.
Everybody thinks they're supposed to give you something that's a good sponsor. Like, no. Sometimes
just
it's about
them being
the
available right. So you can tap into their database, if right. you will, and say, you know, I had no problem calling up or emailing Jeff Melvoin, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, showrunner, mm-hmm. runs showrunner's training program mm-hmm. or whatever. Just saying, hey, I'm thinking about this, but I'm not sure. What do you think?
Right.
You know, and he'd tell me what
well,
he thinks.
Yeah, because
you know,
look, that's the thing, too, that you had to realize.
Or even, you know, Aline, like that, mm-hmm. even that with that meeting she set up, she remembered yeah. me and I'm like, hey, what do you think? But you have to have something happening
right.
in order to start bothering people right. with your problem. Don't just go, hey, can you read my eighth right. draft or whatever? No.
Don't
find another network yeah. to do that in.
That's again.
Don't use those people for reading your scripts. You also mm-hmm. use those people for, I'm trying to figure out showrunners for what do you think? Mm-hmm. Do you know this guy? Whatever.
Right.
No.
Big decision time.
Look, you have to know the favor you're asking.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And don't blow small ones on.
Yes.
You know, like on just don't do. It's like I was saying to the story about like with, you know, like with Doug Atchison, like I've known him for years mm-hmm. and I never asked him to read anything because I was like, I don't know. There's a time I want to ask him to read something,
right.
but
yep.
the stuff I was working on, I just didn't want to do it. I showed him my movie because he asked me to see. I was telling him I was working on. He said, let me see it, mm-hmm. and he really liked it. Mm-hmm. But when he did read my movie, the Wells thing, because he read it through a competition blind, and we were talking about it, and he was like, and he was like, you never told me to read anything. You never asked me to read anything. And I was like, Doug, I'm not going to ask you.
Right.
I'm not going. It's just there's times when I want to ask you. Mm-hmm. Like it needs to be ready where I feel like. This will blow you away.
Right.
Cuz if you burn that one shot and mm-hmm. they don't respond the right way, you really can't go back to them.
Right.
You
right.
know?
It's done. Right.
It's true.
It's over.
So that's you know, it's
be careful.
So that's the big thing.
Pick when you're going to really ask for those favors.
Right.
And by
and let me just say this. People like Darnell, my assistant who always comes over, I always tell him, I'm like, I told him from day one. I'm like, look, I'm a sweetheart, but I'm also an asshole.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I only mean that, like, for instance, you know, I got all those books down there, right? I might go, I want you to read this book. I'm the type of dude, let a week go by and you didn't read that book.
I'm the type of guy. I'm sorry. LL Cool J.
But really.
I'm doing your girlfriend. That's something you can't believe. Sorry.
You know what I mean? Like I said, when my mentor told me, you know, you need to take 2 years and just learn everything you can, study with everybody. I spent about 10 G's.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
For 2 years.
Yep.
Fucking studying with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a guru out there I didn't take the class.
Mm-hmm.
Not one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I'm saying I did all this to get to where I am now.
What are you doing?
What the fuck are you doing? I'm mm-hmm. not just going to be like, oh, well, here's the key.
And not everyone has 10 G's.
No.
But take your ass to the library.
No, and I don't have time to teach you. Right? So I'm mm-hmm. like Glenn. Glenn has a whole philosophy. He's like, I don't have time to teach you. You know, you need to learn your shit yourself.
Listen, I ran this problem with a veterans group that I was asked to set up writer's group for this veterans organization that is, you know, it started as a networking group for veterans who are working in the entertainment business, either as actor, producer, stuntman, yeah. director, writer, whatever. And then, so they asked me, okay, set up the writer's group.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it morphed into, sadly, because I'd say, guys, bring your pages and we'll read it out loud mm-hmm. and we'll discuss it or we'll give you notes. Like, yeah. we'll just, you know, about seven or eight of us will sit around a table and we'll mm-hmm. just, you know, read people's stuff. And like any writer's group works. Mm-hmm. First of all, people weren't doing the writing. And then it was a matter of people wanting to be taught how to do this.
Mm.
How do I intercut between two scenes? What does that look like? How do you know? It's like, I'm not trying to run a school for free.
Right,
like I have
exactly.
a master's degree from UCLA. Yeah. If I
there
want
are format books out there. Okay.
Yeah. I need to see your initiative.
That's
again,
exactly what I'm
saying. I need to see your initiative
yes.
that you're going to figure this out on your own or go say, hey, I'm going to point at the movie to like a Pilar.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go to UCLA Extension.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go to any of the options that are around town. I mean, any of them,
mm-hmm.
you know, Script Anatomy, right. whatever.
Shit's online.
There's all kinds.
Yeah.
Online also.
Yeah.
I mean, just somewhere where you can get the basics. Me, right. I started screenwriting at a community college
mm-hmm.
in Southern Illinois.
Right.
Like right outside of St. Louis. Community college, they had a screenwriting class at night. I went there and that taught me the basics.
Right.
Here's the format. Here's how it differs from novel writing. Then you write your script.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a silent film I wrote. The first thing I wrote was not anything with dialogue. It was mm-hmm. a silent film. To figure out how to do those action mm-hmm. blocks.
How to move a story
How to make it compelling
sure.
in those action blocks.
Right.
And then I shot the thing, you know, and it got in a couple of festivals. Now, from then on, I was hooked. Right. But you got to go somewhere and learn the basics. Hell, you can go to Glendale Community College out here. You can go to LA Community College. Or, LACC. You can go there.
I'm just saying, but it's 2019. Yeah. It's fucking online now. You can get it for free.
Or if you just want to, if some people like the classroom environment and they want to be able to like connect with other people, whatever. Right, I'm just generalizing. You know.
Right. But here's the thing about it. The thing that I realized about 10, maybe 15 years ago is, for a long time, people wanted to write the great American novel. And it's been supplanted by people that they want to write the great American screenplay. And what it is that just like with, you know, but people want the shortcuts. But the thing is, all this stuff is available to you to learn. And you have to, like, just take the baby steps first. And literally, almost every community college has got some screenwriting thing to the way they used to have, like, here's, like, write novel your
writing.
First novel.
Yeah, or creative writing. Short, creative, creative writing is what they call
like,
it.
Like, write your short stories.
It is the new, it's the new thing. It's a moneymaker for every school if they don't have it.
Yeah, and and that's, again, you know, like I said, you know, back in the day, everyone was wanting to write the American novel, and there was tons and tons of novels being written that were terrible, and all this kind of short stories, everything like that, just tons. And the competition is really high. And now it's been this for screenwriting. It's like the competition is very, very high because everyone is writing it, because everyone's like, I can do this.
And everyone's got a web series.
And now,
it's on YouTube.
Yeah, because the means of production are so cheap too, then everyone's like, I can just do this. I can just be shooting and blah, blah, blah. And people want that. See, to me, people want that, they want the fame of it more than anything. Right. And to me, it's like, you want to work. You need to embrace the grind. To grind. You know, I was reading this.
Because the grind is kind of fun to me sometimes. Sometimes I'm having fun in the grind.
I was reading this interview about August Wilson, and he quoted some Indian philosopher who said, all you can really enjoy is the work. You can't
enjoy the process.
Like you can't look for like the rewards, the goal. You can't ask for the rewards. Right. You don't know what the rewards are going to be, and the rewards shouldn't be driving you. It should be, can I get the work done and do it well?
Because if you embrace the process, when you get that rejection, you're not like collapsed, eating a tub of ice cream, laying on your couch for 2 days, binging on Netflix, you know, woe is me, whatever. You just rejection. Okay, that happened. Moving on. I'm moving forward with my other writing, my other projects, whatever.
We'll have to do one on rejection. I don't think we've done one on rejection. But that's a really good, I like how you're saying that, Linnell. That's a really good.
Yeah. If you're,
you should be so busy.
Yes. If you're busy on the process, I've got, like, right now I'm writing a feature, you know, there's some other stuff, like projects in the back burner or whatever. Mm-hmm. If I get a rejection from something I submitted to, first of all, I submit and forget. Right. Honestly, it's kind of like actors with auditioning. You go in, you do your best, and then until if they don't call you, they don't call you. Whatever.
Like, don't write May 3rd is the day. Right.
People are on Twitter like, where is this to get the results of Sundance? Find some shit to do.
Don't do it.
Go to the gym. Go do some yoga.
Be surprised when you see your name is on the list.
Exactly.
Again, like, this is what August Wilson was saying. I find this so fascinating. He was saying, the minute I type the end on one play, I don't get up. I start on the next play
then. Eric Heiserer, who wrote The Arrival, and I think he also wrote Bird Box. Did you see on Twitter how he said last year he wrote 4 features and 2 pilots? I was like, shit. I'm nothing. I'm a speck of lint compared to this man. Speck of lint.
So
now, mind you, his craft is a letter. That's not the expectation.
He's at the top.
But I'll say this for 2019, everyone out there listening, it's like, set whatever goal is right for you. If your goal for 2019 is, I'm going to finish one feature, bravo. Do that. Right. It doesn't need to be Eric Heiserer level because he's been doing this for a long time. Right. He's an Oscar nominee. Right. He's operating on a different level.
He understands craft. He knows
and
how to do it.
Here's the other thing Eric Heiserer probably has. He has someone to do his clothing, his cook his meals, you know, whatever. I'm making assumptions about him, but he probably has some help.
He can afford it.
I've got to go do my own grocery shopping. Right. You know, we have things that take time out of our day or whatever. So yeah, he wrote. I don't question his work ethic at all, but don't think you need to be at that level. Just set, like, I'm going to write 1 feature and 1 pilot this year. That's 6 months apiece. Right. Figure out how you can do that.
You got to do it.
Yeah.
I'm a doer. That's what I'm. People, when I was up north, everybody was like, oh my God, Hilliard, I'm seeing you do all these things or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, for instance, I had to talk to my sister, who I haven't spoken to in about 8 months.
Okay. Right? Okay.
And it's because I can't deal with people who say they're going to do some shit and they don't do it.
Okay.
It's hard for me.
That's everywhere
in
this town.
It's hard for me. I don't have the patience. Our life is hard enough. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I'll just disassociate. Yeah. I'll tell you, I'm not just going to be all passive aggressive and just mm-hmm. ignore you. I'm going to be like, look, for a couple months, it's going to be some distance. I'm telling you why. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. you fucking up. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm not just going to be like, well, I ain't even speaking to her.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to tell you, you
right.
know what I mean, what
to
the deal
face.
Is.
Like
so
an
we,
adult.
So we sat down on Monday. I haven't seen her in probably a year. And I laid in to let her know what my issues were and how she needed to get her shit together for us to have a real relationship again, because I can't deal with that bullshit that they be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I feel
so,
you.
Anyway.
I feel you.
No, but do you have to? I mean, look, I mean, the ethics, the working, again, that's the thing too that, you know, that's the thing that Janine Sherman was always talking about. It's like.
Speaking of somebody who used to do regular and went to the drama. What she used to work.
She used to work comedy.
Right, right, right.
She's a comedy.
Right,
she used to do comedy.
Right, right, comedy.
But,
it,
but,
yeah.
but she always says, be ready. Mm-hmm. You know, like, be, you know, like, make sure you're ready. Like you think that you have a lot of time in your life and, you know, and you don't. Mm-hmm. And you don't because you aren't managing your time right. I mean, it's interesting mm-hmm. you brought up this thing about, like, you get the rejection letter mm-hmm. and you're going to binge the Netflix and blah, blah, blah for mm-hmm. 2 days.
Don't do that.
Look, I'm going to say it right now. I, like, did that when I turned in that thing for DMA mm-hmm. because I was writing three projects at the same time.
That's
and
different.
I got that done right. and I finished it at like, I submitted it to her at like, I think 11 o'clock right before the deadline at midnight. Mm-hmm. And then the next day I got up and I started working on two things. And then at noon, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to watch Netflix for the rest of the day. But I just
that's busted, a treat though.
But I just
and
yeah.
when
that's
we
a,
do
that's,
it,
that's,
but
that's,
I just
that's,
when
that's,
we
that's,
do
that's,
ass,
no, no, no. See, that's a different thing.
See, and when we do it, we are researching.
Yeah,
we are.
Yeah,
because we use it.
You totally
what
use
we
it.
Do.
And you
totally
got to your what happened was you were tapped. Like your
totally
brain was
tapped. I couldn't.
And
I
so
couldn't.
You had it empties. Or, you know, in all fairness, your creative mojo, if you will, it sort of empties out. And because you've done this project, you got it. You had a deadline. You got it in. And now you need to refill the tank.
Right.
So that means if it means sitting and reading a book, you know, outside for a mm-hmm. while, if that's a book that you could potentially like. Every time I read something, I get words, phrases. I'm like, oh, this is good. This
yes.
is good. This is
yes.
good. Or you
that's,
watch.
That's why you
or
read.
You're watching TV
exactly
shows.
Why.
You're watching movies or whatever.
I do that with Stephen King. I'm like, God, he
can turn a phrase.
Just...
He could turn a phrase. Yeah.
That's why
but
you read.
You got to refill the tank. So I'm not against, like, I did this over the holidays. It was like, you know what? I'm just going to relax with my parents and watch mm-hmm. a few movies.
Right.
I'm still, I did knock out a few pages. I'm mm-hmm. not going to lie. But I wasn't like grind
every
day.
I didn't either. That's rare for me.
I was kind of like, if my parents want to go to the damn outlet mall, we're going to go to the damn outlet right. mall. And we're going to spend a day out there with them buying shit that they don't need, whatever, because they got more money and sense. Fine. So then,
money
maybe,
like
so then maybe I don't get like you know I don't get my 3 hours in that right. I wanted to get in on the script. That's mm-hmm. fine.
That's fine.
You have to be forgiving of yourself. That's right. not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is people who like I see it all the time. They get that rejection and then that stops them. Let the rejection be that
motivation,
that fuel in your engine. Like okay, right. now I'm gonna go even harder yeah. and faster.
I used to keep those rejection letters. I, don't
I
do
still
anymore,
do.
But
I
have don't
a,
do them.
I have an org box yeah. on my Gmail that every time a rejection letter comes in, I just move it over there, and it goes. Back years.
That's hilarious.
You know, and I also want to know okay, who rejected me? This is going to come back around.
Yeah, they could go on the list. I can remember.
Right.
No, but the thing about it is I say it because it's kind of like you, I brought that up because it's like you have your moments when you can blow it off. You know, but it shouldn't be because you were told no.
No.
Because
yeah.
exactly.
people are told no all the fucking time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're always told. I mean, I remember.
You mentioned Stephen King. He was rejected by like 20 publishers.
Okay.
For like,
the best
yeah, for,
ever.
Yeah, yeah for
okay.
like.
Really?
The Harry Potter book was also rejected
by 20
right.
people, 30
right.
people. You know, but I mean. And he kept, I think it was like Cujo or Firestar.
Right.
It was Cujo or Carrie got rejected like 20, 30 times. And she's like, really? Dude? I think it was Carrie. I was like, what the fuck, man? I think it was like his, because he says it in his book, the On Writing book. Mm-hmm. He mentions how he was like,
oh, I have that book.
Like he was working on the roof of some like hostess factory thing in the summer, clean it off. I was like, what the fuck is this job? And it sounded so foul, but he was saying, he was like, I had to do that.
It was a
job.
Real menial job.
Real menial job. Yeah. It's kind of like there's all this like rotten food and shit like that was being kicked out. And I was like, that's a really, really tough job. But that's when I'd go home and at night I would type up the book, and I can't remember the order of the like the order of his publishing is not the order that he wrote this stuff. Like he wrote something that got rejected.
Yeah, so something sat on the shelf while he wrote something else.
Yeah. I want to say like he wrote Carrie and then turned it around and like sent something else in, and then I don't remember. It's been in the book, but it's interesting. He's writing all the fucking time.
Which reminds me though, here's the funny thing about we were talking about the competitions earlier. Mm-hmm. Is that sometimes you'll enter a competition and you will be a finalist or a winner in this one. Mm-hmm. And then another one.
Oh, for sure.
You don't get in at all. Sure. Or you're a quarterfinalist.
Yeah.
It's like.
Yeah, there's no parity.
There's no parity for it whatsoever. So.
Because the readers are all different and who knows what their agenda is. Because trust me, every competition out there has some sort of agenda.
Everybody does. They have their mandate. They have their all.
Or they have specifically they're looking for certain types of stories.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
They're looking for certain types of stories that you could write the best script that there is for them. Or that the judges really love.
Right.
They still might say, we can't give this anything because it's not fitting what we want to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just going to happen. Just,
sometimes people are looking at, like, can this be produced?
Right.
And you made a cool-ass art film.
With some noir in it.
Right. Yeah. But the thing I say to people all the time, you know, maybe not so much now because of the way the industry is, but for, like, a long time, every movie that came out, the other studios rejected it.
Oh, God, yeah.
They all rejected it.
Oh, said, Titanic. The guy Universal, who used to run Universal, didn't want to do Titanic.
Hmm. Oh, Ron Meyer.
Ron Meyer, he tells that story all the time.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's just
it happens.
I mean, like, that's the thing that you got to say to yourself. Like, the movies that come out, they went to every studio.
Right.
In town and the same thing with television shows. Maybe not because some stuff can't go everywhere, but they go to a lot of places.
Right.
So people say, no, not for us. It doesn't fit our mandate.
Right.
They might not tell you that, but internally they might be like, we can't put that on the air.
Let's spend like about 10 minutes talking about the Golden Globe.
Okay, how long are we in on this show already?
We're about 1:20 right now.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so here's the thing I wanted to just get into really quick about the Golden Globes. And my New Year's resolution is I'm not going to. Listen, no one sets out to make a bad movie.
That's a lie. No, you know.
No,
it's true.
Everyone puts in their best efforts, and so I, for 2019, I'm not getting on Twitter anymore. I'm talking trash about anybody's movie, and even in this industry, don't do that stuff because they'll stick to you like Teflon. Yeah. But I guess my issue comes with the Golden Globes. I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm not understanding these categories specifically for motion picture.
Okay.
So we have two categories, drama motion picture and musical comedy motion picture. So, and they nominate five films.
I agree with you. They nominate five films
for each,
right.
Which I'm fine with. Okay, they want to separate the dramas from the musicals or comedies, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand how Bohemian Rhapsody is in the drama motion picture category.
Same with A Star Is Born.
And Green Book, and also A Star Is Born, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're in drama, but Green Book is in musical or comedy motion picture.
It comes across as a comedy. It's funny. I think. I'm not saying that's why, but I'm justifyingly, I think that's
about
why.
You talk about Green Book.
I didn't have the same comedic reaction to it. I mean, it's pretty serious stuff we're talking
There's
about.
There's definitely some serious stuff, but it's also
segregation, racism in the South. Right. And
It should have been in the drama category. I agree.
Yeah, and then Bohemian Rhapsody. How do you drama?
That should have been in a musical.
Right, so why were these not?
Well, you have to understand, there's always some weird thing. The Hollywood Foreign Press... Who puts together the Golden Globes?
And why was A Star Is Born not in musical?
They are always getting some sort of pushback for
a lot of people don't have respect for it
for what they choose and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean it's the whole thing that with Tyler Perry. That's not the last thing I saw. When Tyler Perry was like, if y'all wondering if we're that drunk in the audience we're on TV, well, we are that drunk
because
they are that drunk. And at the Oscars, they don't fucking allow alcohol because it's just kind of. I mean, look, the Hollywood Foreign Press. They are their own body.
Mm-hmm.
They look at their the award situation a different way. And so then they just, I think they categorize it their own way.
Right.
I think there was one year where Matt Damon was up for something that was like,
I didn't remember the controversy with that road trip movie that Julia Roberts and Johnny Depp did, or no, the Mexican or something.
It was Brad Pitt.
It ended up in the wrong category. Maybe I'm thinking the wrong movie.
Mm-hmm. But the movie was called The Mexican.
But I was happy for Regina King, right, who won Supporting Actress, I believe. Let me scroll mm-hmm. over. It seems actress in a drama. No, hang on. Supporting. Let's go. Sorry, dead air. Okay. Supporting actress in a drama series, I believe. Supporting actress in, Lord, where's Regina King? Supporting actress in a motion picture. Right. That's what Regina King won mm-hmm. for If Beale Street Could Talk. So. She's the glue that holds the film together, mm-hmm. in my opinion. It was great to see.
Mahershala.
No, Jeff Bridges got the Cecil. And also Carol Burnett got honored as well.
I saw those two, Carol.
Jeff is amazing. It's interesting. You sit there and watch those tributes with someone like Jeff, and you're like,
he's done a lot.
Fuck, like Starman.
Since he was a babe,
he was so young.
And like White
even
Squall.
Even if you watch like Fabulous Baker Boys, he's
been in so much stuff that I just his career.
You forget.
I kept sitting there going, how much money does he have? He has been in hundreds of movies.
Everything.
Fisher King. I mean, come on, dude.
And he's always like,
Tron.
First and second lead.
I mean, the thing about Jeff Bridges is that this is the thing I was telling someone the other day. We're just having a little argument on Twitter about, what's his name? John Borman and William Friedkin, you know? Right. And and one of the things that someone told me one time, he says, you know, people's talent, there's a lot of talent is really in also what you choose to do,
mm-hmm.
because that will determine a lot of stuff that you like how far you go. Because mm-hmm. just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do it, you know. And you have the juice to make things happen mm-hmm. doesn't mean you should. And I'm looking at this Jeff Bridges resume, and I'm just, it's movies I remember loving, watching, growing up loving.
Yeah.
But there's so many that are so good that mm-hmm. he's good in.
He spans different generations also, because you talk to a Gen Xer and they know Jeff Bridges for a certain thing. But if you talk to like
a
millennial, they probably know him more for the True Grit movie.
But he was in that, and people love him from the Coen Brothers film, mm-hmm. the Big Lebowski. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, a couple of years ago, he was in the Hell or High Water.
Hell or High Water,
you know,
was fantastic.
Like you said,
fantastic.
You know, I mean, going back to the Last Picture Show in like '73, it's like, damn, dude, like you have a career. Like that is a career.
Yeah. He has worked steadily.
But okay, so one of the things I was kind of looking at over the holiday break was also this book. I think it's called Grit. Look for it on Amazon.
Oh, I've heard of it.
And it talks about how talent will get you so far, because there's a lot of people that have talent.
Tons.
But you've got to have grit, and the grit is what we were just talking about. When the rejection comes in, you're like, fuck it, I keep going.
Right.
I don't mind you, I'm on a path.
Mm-hmm.
You don't let that stuff stop you. Grit and resiliency, if you have talent plus grit combined, you're gonna get somewhere.
And it's fascinating,
because I'm sure Jeff Bridges, we don't know, but he's had his setbacks, I'm sure.
Oh, God,
I'm sure he's had his things where, you know, Harrison Ford got the part instead of he did in his younger years. For sure. I'm sure they were in competition for sure. Like Indiana Jones was you know.
Right.
Whatever. I know Tom Selleck was up for it too, but I'm just saying, he was in that wheelhouse too, mm-hmm. where he could have been in contention for some of that stuff.
But you made me think about how Hollywood, the reason I learned this from, you know, I was an actor first, right?
Mm-hmm.
And about a year or two into being in LA, the more people I met here, I realized, oh, there's a pattern here, being somebody who studies human behavior. The majority of people who come off the boat or off the bus or drive their car here every day,
drive their Honda,
are people who were like the best person in the musical mm-hmm. at their school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. the most prettiest person in their school,
yep.
the cutest cheerleader, the best looking guy who should probably be in a soap, as an example, right?
From Derry, New Hampshire.
Right. The best dancer, whatever the fuck, right?
Or Flint, Michigan, or wherever you're from, mm-hmm.
And so, but here's what, at first I was scared. I'd go in auditions and be like, oh my God, this person is like 9 times better looking than me.
Right.
Oh my God, this person's like 6'2", perfectly chiseled like fucking Tyson the model. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever the fuck, right? And eventually I started
going... And
then
it gives you a little bit of imposter syndrome. You're like, ooh.
Yes. And you eventually get it. But what helped me to release it, and it's the same thing with being a writer and everything too, right? Is that I immediately went, oh, but they're not me.
Nope.
Your uniqueness is the only thing that you have. Because and I didn't learn more of this until I started actually casting and producing myself. Then I went, oh, you don't get the part because you're not perfect for it. You don't get the part because you were too tall against the lead. You didn't get the part because you were dark skin over light skin. You didn't get the part, but you know what I mean? Your voice was too low and they needed somebody with baritone. Stupid reasons.
Yeah.
Right? Once I realized that, the pressure was off of me. So I encourage that and tell that to other young actors in particular. It's the same thing. So it's the same thing with our writing.
Yep.
You're only as good as your script.
Yep.
Your script will get through. Sometimes it takes years for it to make it through, but it eventually gets through. And the only thing you have is, and I was telling somebody the other day about, they said something about, yeah, but now I'm 40 years old. I said, yeah, but you're not 30.
When you 40 years old, you have a bank of life experience to pull off of.
I said, what you know now is not what you knew when you were 30.
Yeah.
And that's what makes you so much better.
And embrace that instead of being like,
Right. So whenever I think about, man, I wish I would have made it when I was 32, I don't.
You might have been in and out at 32. I don't know. Things happen the way they're supposed to happen for a reason. Embrace that.
I'm so much more prepared for it now. And I've been in this industry.
For sure.
I'm 48 years old. I've been in this industry since I'm 12. You know what I mean? That's a long time.
The thing is, people don't realize from the outside how, like I said at the top of the podcast, how hard is it to stay in?
Right.
There's so much stuff that goes on behind the scenes.
Because the system is built to push you out.
Right. Yeah, it has to because, the talent thing, people tell you all the time out here, like, talent is a dime a dozen. Like, everybody... in reality, fucking everybody has a talent. And if they know how to fucking like to maximize it, then they can be successful. Right. But even then, you can maximize your talent. You still might not be successful, or you might be successful for a second.
Yeah.
Because you don't have enough other things around you to help you navigate the other stuff in the industry, the rejection, this constant, the politics.
The fact that you're in a new city. Like, if you just come out here and you don't have friends and you don't know
what
you're
eating, it's super expensive.
Yeah, but the thing you gotta say to yourself, too, is like, I notice this a lot. Sometimes I'll sit down and I'll watch people and I'm just kind of like, oh, so what happened to them? Like, they had a really great run on certain things. Mm-hmm. And what happened? And then invariably, it's personal life stuff.
It's always personal.
It's something where either the
politics... Because people come here with the baggage.
Yeah, there's politics.
And they think that making it's going to solve it.
Right, solve the baggage.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's politics.
You got to work your baggage out.
You have to... There's there's the movie coming out. I think, but I saw it on Will Smith's thing. They just started principal photography on Bad Boys 3. Okay.
Okay.
But I said,
so they finally got a script that will.
They got a script they're going to go with.
Okay.
But I said to myself, when was the last time I saw Martin Lawrence like in anything? But you remember he had that time when he was like caught running around like
crazy, in the streets or something like that?
Because there's a lot happened to you. And that's just a major star coming from when he did Boomerang, or not Boomerang, but House Party.
Oh, he was in Boomerang too, wasn't he probably?
I think it was. I remember, so I said that. I know, but he was in House Party. And it's like House Party and then in these movies. And now it's like, oh, he's still having to do it. But there's been a lull.
Big Mama's House.
I think there's been a lull since the last Big Mama's House and this movie. And he might have been on that TV show with... Kelsey Grammer.
That was probably the last one, but that only went one season.
And you say to yourself, you're flying high. What can get into your life that can, and it happens to a lot of people.
Yeah,
but you look at someone
Chris
like
Tucker.
To a lot of people, and you don't know what it is. You can't know what it is. But that's where the industry like really chews on people and wait. And those are stories you never hear about.
Right.
You know, it's too bad. Yeah. She's like, what the fuck happened to him? He was so great. Well, or she was so good.
Before we wrap up, so did you enjoy the Golden Globes this year?
I was watching on a plane and the sound was a little bit spotty, you know, and the captain kept interjecting his opinions and stuff about, or not opinions, but like, we're doing this. I was like, I don't care doing it.
Right.
Okay.
So
I was happy to see Glenn Close got recognized too. She's
love my Glenn.
a legend as well. I put her in the Jeff Bridges category.
She's the reason
well.
I write. People don't know the story.
Oh, really?
I'll tell you off.
Okay.
You know, she's never won an Oscar or anything.
What? She never won an
Oscar.
Not even
for Fatal Attraction. She didn't win Best Supporting Actress.
I think she might have been nominated, but I don't think she won.
We'd have to Google that.
I'm pretty sure she hasn't won an Oscar.
Okay. But we were talking about Green Book offline.
Yes.
And I just wanted to say this online because I do think it's a little important.
Mm-hmm.
I personally enjoyed the movie. I had a problem or two,
mm-hmm.
but they weren't so much they didn't make me enjoy the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was just to be expected when, I'm just going to say it, when white folks write a script like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to focus on...
Yeah, you know, and it was his dad. It was a son who wrote the story about his dad.
Right.
And once you know that, because what struck me was like I was watching Golden Globes, and then I saw Mahershala Ali get supporting actor, and I was going, why is he in a supporting actor category? Again, mm-hmm. me having issues with the categories, whatever. And then when I finally,
they also didn't want them to compete against each other.
When I finally reflected back,
you know,
on,
it's
yeah,
politics.
Right. When I found, but they'll let like the girls from The Favorite compete with the one another, Olivia
true.
Coleman and Emma Stone,
on who
or
it is,
Rachel. No,
he had
Rachel.
A better chance of winning at supporting
again. So you know, then we're kind of playing games. Then.
But they could have put him in a musical comedy. You know, do they have a musical comedy? I mean, it's all this kind of crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was kind of like, oh, how is this supporting? And then I actually thought about the film. I was like, oh, no.
It's not his movie?
The perspective is from the Viggo Mortensen character from the jump.
Right.
We meet him first.
He saves him all the time.
Now, I guess the challenge for you screamers out there is watch Green Book and think about, okay, what kind of movie would you make? Just do it hypothetical in your brain. I did it while I was driving.
Because you picked some cool ass shit that could have been, that I would have wanted to see.
Yeah.
From
yeah.
another perspective.
Right.
I was
right.
Like,
if you had focused on the Don Shirley character instead to know, you know, what was he doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did he get to where he was?
Right.
What was, and then we, you know, there's a little bit of controversy about the film because Mahershala Ali was told there was no family and mm-hmm. it turns out there was, and they have a different, you know, recollection of how events were done. But again, this is someone doing a film. I don't understand how they didn't get the life rights from Don Shirley's family or whatever. I guess they just decided, well, we're just going to do the movie. Okay. But again,
I feel like, oh, he's dead.
The movie is good. I enjoyed it. My two older parents enjoyed it because mm-hmm. again, they're from the South and they know about how, you know, navigating through Alabama, and they were just
movie.
They were so excited
it
about
feels good at
they
the
were
end.
So excited about the different spots. Ooh, he in Louisville now. Ooh, he in Alabama now. You know, they were so excited about that. It's like a road trip too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of a white saver. We talked about that too. There's
it's definitely a white saver. Yes.
The strong points are the performances. I thought were strong from everyone.
Great. Viggo killed it too.
Even Linda Cardellini.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
and the whole family that mm-hmm. the Viggo Mortensen character has.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the challenge I would put out to people who are like trying to write something this year, just think about if you were going to do it, how would you do it differently? Instead of getting on Twitter, and because I saw a lot of backlash about the film on Twitter and people attacking and whatever and saying, oh my God, you don't even meet Mahershala Ali until, you know, 20 minutes into the film. It's like, well, that's telling you right now whose film it is. Even though it's called Green Book, which was, you know, I guess if the title had possibly been different, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you have a title like Green Book, you're implying to me, because that is an item from African-American history.
It was a very tiny subplot to the movie at all.
Right.
You know,
I mean, he did stay at some different hotels. Yeah. I'm sorry, spoiler alert. He did stay at some different hotels from the Viggo mm-hmm. Mortensen character. So the two were separated at times. And you could see the difference in the conditions.
Yeah.
I like the film, but again, think about how you would do it differently. Instead of like just lashing out on Twitter and being like, this is canceled and we hate this or whatever. And no, think about if you were going to do it from Mahershala Ali, the Don Shirley character's point of view,
mm-hmm.
what would that movie be?
Right.
And go write that or go find those stories
mm-hmm.
because they're out there. I thought Don Shirley was just so compelling. I understood him.
He played the fuck out of him too.
entirely. I understood like his... I mean, it's also his disconnect too with his own people.
Right. He ain't from the hood. He ain't from that growing up
right.
like that.
Which
that.
Is something, you know, we all talk about on this podcast mm-hmm. time and time again about the nuance in black culture.
Yes.
And the nuance in black life. Mm-hmm. Like, just because you're black doesn't mean that we all think and act the same.
Even in the 60s, there were people who were successful.
Don Shirley was doing something else because he had hung out in Russia and mm-hmm. he like learned piano and all these different, and mm-hmm. spoke Russian and all these different languages. Like, mm-hmm. that's on another level.
Right.
And so... The image I loved in the film.
See, that to me goes back. I was saying this to you before. It's kind of like, what is the story? What's the storytelling box that black stories are stuck in? Because a story where it's kind of like the guy who did Emperor Jones, like he spent a lot of time in Russia too, the black guy. And it's like, you know, you don't tell the story, or to not tell the story about the black man who went to Russia to learn some sort of cultural aspect that he then brings to the States to for his livelihood. It's a crime. It's a crime,
right?
Because that's like such a rare story.
That's
like,
completely different.
I mean, like, that's what movies are supposed to tell you, that story. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't need to tell you the story about people just hanging out in the hood or people hanging out in the South.
But they don't think nobody can relate to all that
stuff.
But see,
well,
but it's ridiculous.
Well, see,
then show the fish out of water story.
I felt for Shirley so much because, like,
that to me, the people who always say that, I don't think the audience can relate, blah, blah, blah. To me, I say to myself, fuck you, because that's what international cinema does,
right?
And world cinema tells stories about humanity in a way that is real. It's just that it's this kind of stuff that we don't want to swallow. Mm-hmm. And there's a movie that I really wanted to see. I didn't get to see it. It's called came out this year. It's called Capernaum. Something like this. Like, no one really talked about it. But the gist of it was, I might be getting this a little wrong, is it's like this kid grows up in North Africa in the slums, and I think he gets brought to France, and it's so difficult. And he later turns around and sues his parents for even having him because they gave him such a bad life. Mm. I'm like, fuck, that's fucking crazy ass story. Yeah. But you know what? I guarantee you people in America probably feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I bet they would understand that story,
right.
But would you see it out of here? No, because that type of class struggle wouldn't be allowed. People wouldn't want to fund it.
True.
But that's like a story that would be great.
But you're right. We're accustomed to seeing the black stories told in a certain space, and this Don Shirley thing is out of, because it's not civil rights. I mean, it's part civil rights because, you know, you find out later he was interacting with Dr. King and whatnot.
And that's the only thing I had an issue with. Sorry to interrupt you, Leno. Is what bothered me is every time he got into a situation, Vito's character helped him.
Yep.
And I'm like, he was so smart that he could have outwitted some of those situations.
For sure.
You know what I mean? And that's what bothered
me. But again, we had a white director, a white writer, and this is the point of view they chose.
There you go.
And
I still enjoyed it, but
I would say anyone out there who has a different point of view, a different perspective, write that script.
Right.
We need those scripts. Get them out there.
And that's
the only way you're going to change
things. That's actually a very good note. If you see a movie that you don't like, you write your version of it.
Your version.
If you can, you can't do a Marvel, but you know what I mean?
Right.
For example, a movie like that, and let's wrap it up. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's what John August always says.
What's that?
Write the movie that you love.
That you want to see.
That someone did that you hated. Mm-hmm. Write the one that you love.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, that's what's up. Where you at, Linnell?
You can find me on Twitter at Linnell White, LYNELLEWHITE. And that's about it. I do a little Instagram, but I take weird pictures of stuff. So it's not really a place where you're at, Chris.
Unauthorized CBD on Twitter and Instagram. That's where I am.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Yes, indeed.
Feliz Año Nuevo, si se habla español, for our Spanish speaking.
Yeah, Simón. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, whatever you guys listen to. Give us a 5-star review. We really need that for the metrics. Keeps us out there, you know, at the top and all that. We appreciate y'all. Please go on our new what, Chris?
Our Patreon page, there'll be a link in the show notes. It'll be the first thing in the show notes, so you won't miss it.
It'll be in there 3 times.
Yes.
we appreciate y'all. Thank you, Linnell. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, guys.
We'll see Lisa very, very soon. And last thing I'm going to say, Deadly Class, a series that I was on, drops Wednesday, January 16th.
Billboards all over town. I saw one on Sunset yesterday.
Yeah,
I saw
all over the place.
It's really good.
Sci-Fi Channel.
Really good.
Comes on after The Magicians. So please check us out. I think it's at like 10 o'clock at night or something like that. So the new season starts. I wrote episode 6. So check it out. Deadly Class. With that, on this show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
2019.
Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel. And I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. You wanna be
a rider. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.